My name's Nate Finn. I'm the security director for the church here at the Loop and all of our other locations. We've got, is everybody from Houston's First? Anybody visiting from out of town or another church? Where are you visiting from?
I'm from here, but from different church.
Okay. We're glad to have you. Thanks for coming. So I'm going to just start off with a quick word of prayer, and we'll get going on this thing. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this opportunity that you've given us to just learn about you, get some wisdom on leading groups and growing the kingdom. So I just ask that you give us wisdom, give us endurance through this evening. We're going to be here for a while, and we thank you for the opportunity. And we pray all these things in your son's name. Amen. All right, so this is the first time actually for me to do Midnight Madness. So it's my second year here at Houston's First. I started back in May of 2015. So it's good to be here. I love being here at Houston's First, and it's great to see the proactiveness of our congregation, our staff, that the security mindedness, I think, is probably a better word, that our culture has here at Houston's First. It's actually a really big change for me. I came from Seattle, a really big church up in Seattle, and it wasn't quite that way up there. So it was a nice change to come down to a place where people are actually considering and thinking about these things. So this class is Safety Zone, Ensuring a Safe Sunday in an Unsafe World. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about, but I tried to narrow it down to a few things that would help everybody give everybody a basic understanding of safety and security, what they mean. So let me start off by asking you this. Think to yourself, when was the last time that you've been in a situation where you have felt unsafe? Anybody willing to share?
Depends on where you were living.
Okay.
We've lived various places, but living in Africa, I felt very insecure for a long time over where we lived. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know the culture or the people and didn't speak the language. Mm-hmm. It put up barriers that made me feel insecure.
When you say unsafe, I would say always on the alert, watchful.
Mm-hmm. Is there a time in the recent past where you felt you've been in a situation where you don't feel like that safety mechanism is that in place, whether it's emotionally or physically?
In my old job, yeah, because where I had to go, places I had, the slums, the hood.
Well, just in those two answers alone, it actually points to something in regards to safety, and I'll get to that. But one of the things that a lot of us don't realize, and I don't think I really realized it until I got into the industry, is that the words safety and security tend to, they're too often used interchangeably, right? As if they mean the same thing. So we're going to learn a little bit here how inaccurate that actually is. We all need to understand the true meaning of it, and in the end, the safety or the security that we provide here at Houston's First or at another church location, your safety and the security that we provide will actually thrive much more than it will fail if we learn the difference between safety and security but how they work together. We got parents, everybody parents here? Yeah. But if you look back, regardless if you have kids now, you remember the first time that your kid or your child was in your arms after its birth, and I've got two boys, we basically just devote ourselves to protecting them. We want to protect their emotions, we want to protect their physical well-being. And at sometimes we probably have overdone it. But think about while you're giving them a warm hug or they're getting a hug from us, you're making that child feel safe. But, or at least in that moment. But our love alone for that kid, that child, I keep saying kid because I call my kid a kid, that for that child is not going to always protect them. So there's got to be physical and emotional barriers, or physical or emotional mechanisms. Some of you may or may not have seen Monsters, Inc., but we can tuck the child into bed and we think they're safe, but the child may be either in the dark. Sometimes darkness will make them fear or not feel safe, or the snuggie that they don't have or that we've lost or we can't find, or it's in the dryer getting dried off, and the next day he'll have it. My own kid, Grady, for the longest time, every time that we had to clean his little snuggie, it took him the longest time to go to sleep, because he'd be nice and safe in his room, but emotionally, because he didn't have that physical mechanism that made him feel safe, he felt unsafe. So only when our emotional world and our physical world are assured and they're safe, in essence, we are safe. So our emotional mechanism of safety and our physical mechanism of safety have to work together in order for us to really feel safe. For example, I was in Iraq for 7 months, and every time we went out on a patrol, I had I actually had two weapons. I had a rifle and a pistol. But every time we went out, I didn't feel safe because physically I had all the physical mechanisms, my weapons. I had some guys with me that felt safe, but emotionally I'm thinking about I'm outside the walls, those safety walls in that base. We're doing, foot patrols out just basically out in the desert, and there's nothing that's protecting us from the outside extremities. So, a sniper could be in sighting in on us, or an IED could have been out there waiting on us to step on or explode. And those things, those emotional feelings, made me feel unsafe. Even though I had my weapons and I had my guys next to me, you still feel unsafe. So you can see how the physical part and the emotional part need to be together and need to work in tandem. I did some research kind of on the definition of safety, because there's no one definition to define safety. So I tried to do some research on getting different definitions, and here are a few. A site supervisor said to be safety is to be free from risk of physical harm. A tradesman said something that protects you, a barrier from harm. A customer service consultant said safety is a sense that nothing or no one will intentionally hurt me. And an underground mine worker said safety is about people. It's about looking after each other, keeping an eye out for my mates. Must have been from Australia. So as you can see, they're all different definitions. Some are physical definitions. Some are a little bit on the emotional side. Let me go back here. So safety has both emotional and physical attributes. Both must be in agreement in order for safety to be achieved. Let's move to security. So security is the process of ensuring our safety. It's credible, constant maintaining. The safeguards that we expect will always be in place. So, for instance, things that we think or we believe to be constant or we expect to be constant, let's just use the church as an example. We've got alarm systems, we've got cameras, we've got police officers and security guards. We've got policies and procedures in place. We've got restricted access to doors. We've got locks, name badges. We have a building. We have walls and a roof, etc. So those are all what we would consider to be a constant provision of security that's going to make us feel safe. All of these probably are more, and more are credible security mechanisms. And these, they basically protect us from the outside extremities. So one thing that one way we can look at it is as the umbrella. You look at the umbrella up there. Security is the umbrella part, right? It protects us from the extremities, but safety is the mechanism that keeps us warm. It keeps us dry. So those are you know, the differences of safety and security. And once a person sets foot on our property, our goal here at Houston's First, and should be at any church or any organization, is to ensure the safety of everyone to our furthest extent. Now, can we protect you from everything? That's not very likely. They always say in the risk management industry is that you can't protect people 100%, you know, 100% of the time, or there's always going to be a percentage of risk no matter where you go. But what we do is, in order for us to provide our attendees, our members, our staff, and our volunteers, whoever comes through those doors, we, on a regular basis, we assess our vulnerabilities. We do risk assessments. We even do interviews with people to find out, you know, what are people worried about. I mean, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people bring up the topic of, you know, terrorism and you know, those kind of threats. But to be honest with you, even at this time and age, terrorism still is not, for at least for churches, still is not the priority or should not be the priority threat for a church. It's, to be honest with you, the things that we have to deal with on a regular basis is what goes on within the walls of the church. We have domestic disputes. We have individuals that are, you know, may have missed their medication, and or somebody that's mentally disturbed or just having a difficult time in life. All of those are different factors, and there are different instances that even since I've been here, I've had to deal with just about every one of those. And to be honest with you, those are the actual threats and the vulnerabilities that we have in our church, and those are the ones that we have to continue to look at and continue to evaluate and be ready for. I'm not saying that we should ever ignore, you know, the terrorism threat, because there is a threat out there and it is legitimate, but we also look at the likeliness and the impact that it would have on the church. Obviously, a terroristic threat would be highly impactful on the church. It could tear the church apart. But the likeliness of that happening at this point, statistically speaking, is very, very unlikely. You're more likely to die or get in a car wreck at this point than have to experience a terrorist attack in church. So we don't ignore that. We have plans in place to respond and react to those instances. But at this point, what we do is, you know, the reason why we're doing this class is we want to inform our Life Bible Study leaders, any leader in the church, that a lot of the threat really that you should really be worrying about is those that are going on in your class. And we want to help you figure out ways to better respond and react to those situations. For example, I've had at least two or three instances as of probably the beginning of last year where a report would come to me that there's an individual that has been attending a class, that individual will either monopolize the conversation, they'll say some things that make people feel awkward, depending on the environment that they're in or the demographic of that class. Variations of those type of incidents, so I'd have to come in and I'd consult with the Life Bible Study leader, and we'd figure out, okay, is this person taking, you know, medications? What's their background? Figure out who the individual is and how often this has been happening, and then we figure out a plan on how to address the issue. So the ultimate thing is, these are things that you may experience if you're leading a Life Bible Study. These are things that you should be thinking about. And what I would encourage you to do is, let me go through these last few slides. If the variables risking our safety can be predicted, then they can be prevented. So that means awareness and preparation, and we'll get to that in just a second, and it equals safety. Last comment on that is, you know, we as a society can no longer afford to live in a world where we simply hope that nothing will happen and then solely rely on the first responders to save us when something does happen. Only when empowered with the truth of what it means to be safe will the securing of our safety be made possible. So all that to say, you know, we can't always allow or rely on HPD to save us from whatever threat is happening. We have to empower ourselves. And the way we do that is through training. We do it through communication. We do it through conversations. We do it through assessments. We do it through actually acting upon whatever that threat is. Now, one thing I would encourage, if you're a leader and you're a leader of a group, I see a leader of a group, as especially a Life Bible Study, as a shepherd, right? You're the shepherd, you're the leader of the group. Your flock is the classmates or the people attending your class. We have a duty, in essence, to an extent, as a LBS leader, to protect that class. Not necessarily in the physical matter, but more really on the emotional side. And what I mean by that is, are you getting to know your people? I'm just going to give you a few things to proactively do as your group is growing or as you start your group. Things that you should be looking out for. You should know your people, know who they are. You should be talking to them. You should kind of have a discerning mind as you go through the class and understand, you know, as you see people change and develop, people are going to stand out. Those who, you know, tend to want to monopolize or disrupt a class, you want to actually put that in your memory and remember those situations. And then, obviously, when it becomes an issue, and sometimes it does it over time. Other times, it could be just, you know, we had this incident where a lady came in and she just monopolized the entire group and made people feel awkward, and those things should not just be reported, but I think as a leader you have a duty to step in and protect the entire class. We can't always necessarily, we want to love people, but we can't worry about people's feelings always being hurt. Because you have one person causing the issue, right? And you have 20 or 30 other people who are trying to grow and trying to develop in their faith, and you've got one person that's causing the issue. I call that person eventually, you know, depending on how that's taken care of, you got your sheep and then you have your wolves, right? So you want to make sure that you are protecting your sheep from the wolf. Everything good? So those are things just to look out for, to pray for discernment and on how to handle that or how to respond to those situations. You always have myself, I'm always available. Typically what happens in those situations is the Life Bible Study leader will go to whoever the director is or whoever's in charge of that group, and then inform them. Usually the word gets up to me, and then we'll address the matter as it escalates. A lot of times I don't usually find out until it's the third or fourth time this specific person has done something. And by that time, you know, a lot of times what happens with when a wolf attacks is, number one, a sheep will get, at least one sheep will get killed, right? I'm not talking about physical death here. I'm just metaphorically speaking. A sheep will get killed, but the biggest, the really big impact is that the flock will scatter. So if you allow a situation to go on and continue to go, you will eventually see the size of your class decrease because you've allowed that wolf to come in and scatter your flock. So that's one thing. That's just one thing that we want to avoid. Obviously, we're not going to instantly respond and say you're out of this class, depending on, you know, the impact of the situation. we want to love the person. We want to you know, bring them to Christ, and we care for them. But when it comes to a point where it is starting to scatter the sheep, or it's causing even one person to not come back because this individual has caused these disruptions or these distractions, that's when we need to respond. And praying for discernment is important, because you can, God will give you the discernment to say, okay, I need to respond to this before it gets out of hand. And it may not be an instant that person's kicked out of the class, but it may just be a conversation that we need to have with the individual, saying, we understand, you know, that you're monopolizing time, or you're saying some, you know, disturbing things, or you're we've had an instant where an individual would kind of corner people in conversations and, you know, kind of make them feel awkward or uncomfortable. So approaching that person and pointing out the issue that's going on a lot of time fixes the issue. Now, there are times where the individual is a little, you know, either disturbed or maybe, you know, on medication and missed it, and there's deeper issues there that we have to address and take care of. But a lot of times, if you can address the situation before it gets out of hands, really most of the time, it's gonna solve itself. That individual will, they'll get the message. You'll pray with them. You'll look after them, you know. And you might have to invest a little bit of time, but that also shows them that you care about them and you love them. And you don't just want them to get up and leave. You want them to grow as well, but they need to be an effective, you know, contributor to the group as well, and not cause, you know, dissension or a distraction. So, having said that, I'd like to open it up, you know, to questions or concerns that you all have. Is everybody here a Life Bible Study leader or a group leader or going to be? Is that? Are there any questions that you guys have in regards to safety and security? One other thing I was going to do is we'll go through this before we end, but...
You know, yeah, I've had both of those situations. Okay. And they're probably the same person that you're talking about. And we did turn them over to your office, and they came back several weeks later, a whole different, you know, come to class, calm, apologize, and just want to be part of the group. So I think if we would have not hit it head on, it would have, the whole class would have abandoned us.
Yeah, would have gotten messy.
Because they didn't feel comfortable.
Here in probably a few months, I'm going to do a few groups before I open it up to Life Bible Study leaders. I recently returned from a training certification course. It's called Management of Aggressive Behavior. We'll just call it MOAB. Basically, it's a technique that you can use to communicate with other people who either might be disturbed or in an escalated mood or emotionally heightened phase of whatever they're feeling. It teaches you an effective technique in order to help that person de-escalate from their heightened sense of behavior. And it also teaches you how to detect those, or what could actually happen before it even happened. So it was a 3-day course, very, very helpful. I think it's very applicable to this environment, given the different demographics of people that we have coming in, specifically to the Loop, because it is so big and we have thousands of people coming in and out all the time. A diverse group of people. But what I'll be doing, I'm actually going to be doing some training with some of our security members, some FBA teachers, and then some other groups. But I do plan on opening it up to Life Bible Study leaders as well, because we've had situations where a lot of times, in hindsight, what I've done is try to encourage that Life Bible Study leader. And I don't think we've had conversations yet or anything. I'm not sure.
Belinda Cox is my associate.
Okay. But a lot of times, if you know, the Life Bible Study leader can approach that person personally, instead of bringing it to us, it actually, in some ways, I think I know which person you're talking about, and I think it was best that we had that discussion with that specific individual. But a lot of times, if the Life Bible Study group leader can address that person on a personal level, not only will it take care of the situation, but it'll actually make it a better relationship, and that person will definitely, you know, do a quicker change because the person that is speaking to them, they're already familiar with and they've already earned their trust. So a lot of times it's better for that Life Bible Study leader to speak to that individual rather than somebody like myself who they've never seen before and all they see is security, come in and say, hey, you know, which I don't do. I try to be as loving and nice as possible, but just emotionally and what they see and perceive, a lot of times it's more effective and would be more effective if the Life Bible Study leader can take care of it themselves. Obviously, you want to pass it on to you know, the leadership and myself, just to give us a heads up of what is going on, so we can have, you know, that on our radar. But that's just, you know, a helpful, you know, piece of information. And what that training would do is give you a little bit more confidence on how to address those issues, because you can't just go up to a person and say, "Have you not taken your meds today?" Or you gotta understand and realize that there is a method to addressing, you know, certain individuals that have a potential of, you know, emotionally escalating, you know, just in a split second. So there's ways to be able to, there's tone, there's words, there's body language, and the, you know, 90% of communication is done nonverbal. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that before, but just what we do, our eye contact, our nodding, our body language speaks more to that individual than just our words. So when both of those things can come together well, then that's a win. So, yes, ma'am.
What about if you have somebody that you discern is suicidal?
I would definitely bring it up to leadership, and those are tough ones, because you don't want to exacerbate the situation and just, you know, bring it to the individual. And obviously you want to love them and make sure that they know that they have a strong community that they can be around. They have people that can support them. But if you are pretty confident that somebody has either, you know, mentioned suicide or have said something like, you know, I'm not worth anything, or my life's not, you know, worth, you know, living anymore, or things like that, language that relates to, you know, suicide tendencies, then I would definitely, you know, bring it up to your director. And then, you know, a lot of times either the pastoral staff will have resources that can help them, but it would be a matter of how do we address this with that individual now that we know this information. Can we just go in and say, hey, is everything okay? We've noticed you've been down. Are you depressed? Ask them questions that aren't related to suicide, but obviously that would hopefully help them open up. But those are tricky. It's funny you ask that. I had a pastor in Seattle in my old job. and we had a gentleman. He was actually a young age, in the mid-20s, and he had a couple of mentions, you know, about suicide and things like that, and had called that pastor and said some, like, you know, I'm going to end it today or whatever. That pastor called just initially and took his own initiative and called 911 and told him where he was, his address, or he had his address and all that. 911 responded. They got there before he tried anything. Well, when they apprehended him and you know, was going to take him to the hospital, they said, "How'd you guys know?" And you know, the paramedic said, "Well, your pastor told us. He called us." Well, he lit up, and Mike was going to go up there and see how he was doing, and the paramedic said, "Don't even go near him. He wants to kill you," because he literally was going to try to commit suicide. And then after that, Mike had to come to me, and this guy probably for about 6 months was writing letters to Mike saying, just subliminally saying. I could quote one comment that he said. He said, "If I ever see you in public, I'm going to give you the hug that you'll never forget." He never came out and said, "I'm going to shoot you" or "I'm going to kill you," but he gave those kind of, those subliminal messages saying, "You ruined my life," basically, because he had to get his driver's license taken away. He couldn't drive. He couldn't go anywhere. Didn't have the liberty that he used to have because of, what he was going to try to do. So he blamed all of that on his pastor because his pastor cared for him and took the initiative. Was that the right move? Probably so. And did we know he was going to respond that way? No. But if you can, prepare and you can, you have time to make those decisions, I would say as soon as you do hear somebody speaking that type of language, I would definitely bring it up to somebody. And then somebody that can, usually leadership knows like who to take that to, like pastoral care, people like that. Myself, I would want to know just for, people's safety when they're here. It's always good to, let somebody know what's going on and your concern. I always tell our staff, there's no question that's too stupid. There's no, response or anything that is unmerited. It's like I'll make the decision on how we're gonna, respond after the fact. But I would encourage everybody, if you think something is just out of the ordinary about a situation or an individual, you got to tell somebody. Because most of the time, we just don't know and cannot anticipate what is going to happen. So if I call it discernment, it's like that sixth sense. Sometimes you just know something's not right about an individual, or something's not right about this situation. Tell somebody. Most of the time we have a police officer here on site. Never hurts to tell them. Most of the police officers that work here have been here for multiple years, so they're very familiar with the people and the church, and they're very supportive.
What about your other campuses?
Other campuses are very similar. They're just a little smaller. We usually have an officer there at most of the events. I try to mirror those smaller campuses to what we do here, to an extent, but a lot of what the way I decide or think it should work, it depends on the amount of people there. So we don't have any sort of special algorithm or anything like that. It's just kind of determining, okay, this congregation is this size. I also assess, the location of that place. So like our downtown campus is a little bit more vulnerable, and it's in a little bit more, risky spot. So a lot of times we'll have really more officers there than what the number of people would dictate, but primarily it's because of the high threat area that they're in. And the new campus that's going to be in downtown is probably going to even be a little bit more, a little bit rough, but, we'll have probably more security there than what the number of attendance really dictates. But it's because, they're in a little bit tougher of an area. So there's a lot of different factors that kind of play into that, the demographics, the age groups, and if they have a lot of kids, kids are our priority. We always are looking at considering our student ministry and our preschool ministries. So, any other questions?
Yeah,
have
a security team at the other campuses?
We have. Like Cyprus, we have two or three police officers there on Sundays. Now, they have a small ministry center, so anytime that they have like Life Bible Study groups there or women's ministry, let's say on Tuesdays and then Thursdays, I think is when they have a few women's ministries groups, then we'll have an officer there, but we don't have Like, we don't send our contract security there, mainly because, number one, budget. And number two, as long as we can have a police officer there, it's best, because it's a really small...
But as far as, you know, the team that you're with or head up, nothing like that out there?
No, we are in the middle of training. Like, we have a service protection team here, of guys that are staged in the auditorium, who I'll be training, I've already done one training with them, but we'll be doing that MOAB training with them as well. They're in the auditorium to kind of keep an eye on, you know, potential distractions and disruptions, kind of give that extra set of eyes on what's going on in the service, and then if something does happen, then those are the guys that are going to address those situations. For the other campuses, we're working on doing the same thing with them. Again, I'm trying to mirror a lot of things that we do here to those other locations. It'll just be a smaller scale.
Because my concern is should be moving into a new church in June.
Right, yeah,
the schedule. Yeah. And we're expecting a larger growth.
Yeah, bigger attendance, absolutely. Yeah, so I'm going to work with some of the guys at Cypress, like Josh Kanjavi, and get with some of those guys that can help point me or point certain guys in the Cypress campus to do that same training. So we'll be getting a group of guys together doing the same type of stuff. We'll have officers out there. The new location at Cypress will have a Sun States, one of our contract securities out there, on a regular basis as well. So that one will be very similar to what we're doing here in a lot of just about every way that we have here. So a medical team, I think you guys already have, actually my wife is part of the medical response team there at Cypress. I think they have three or four either nurses or paramedics involved with that team. So as these churches are getting bigger, I'm noticing those things, so I'm trying to make preparations to have the right mechanisms in place as you're ready to, you know, open up in June. Because I agree, you guys, I think once the doors open in June, you're going to see a huge climb in numbers, which is great. It's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. So. I think most of the time when you were talking about suicidal people, mm-hmm. when you have a situation like that, usually it's not something that's happening here on the grounds, although we have had suicide on the grounds of the site. But it's, you find out a different way, and you do like your pastor in Washington State. You make that first call to the first responders, the 911 call. I got a call one time, and that person had just taken a huge overdose. Mm. And I made two calls. The first one was the 911 to get the right people at the right location, and the second one was to family of that person to get a known person there as quickly as possible. But I went to the psych hospital for that person because I got a phone call. Yeah, but I wasn't afraid that person was going to hurt me.
Right. It was an odd situation with that, with the one I was talking about particularly. He had returned home after whatever therapy he had gotten at the hospital, and he wasn't, it was time, over time, he wasn't able to drive, couldn't go anywhere, didn't have all these freedoms that he used to have. Now it's allowing, obviously, the enemy to lie and get in and deceive him. He started, blaming people that he could cast the blame on. So obviously Pastor Mike was the first one, because he's the one that made the call to stop him from it. And that's a lot of the times when you see shootings at churches, most of them are internally, they're domestic related. Now the one that happened in North Carolina or South Carolina, that was a different agenda. He had a specific agenda, and that's actually not very common. It's very rare. Everyone that I've read about was either a husband, that was going after a wife or going after a pastor who was counseling that couple and either advised that maybe they should separate for a time or whatever, or custody, something that either related to their specific relationship or the custody of their children. It was always the husband that would come and retaliate, and it was always, you know, that pastor that had done that
several times. I'm shaking this for my company. Mm-hmm. It's worrying about the lady that's marriage is on the rock and her husband comes in and storms up the stairs and things like that. They don't tell us that's happening. We can't prepare for that or prepare them for that.
Yeah, you can't prevent all suicides. A lot of times what you have to do is minister to those that are left.
And
at least in this environment.
Right, and they're not the easiest ones, right? I mean, they're so difficult, and it really puts us in that awkward position because those are hard. It takes a lot of time and really a lot of emotional stress on ourselves to put that time and emotion and care into that one individual when you have this whole flock. And I mean, imagine Pastor Greg's stress. I mean, he's got thousands of people that he looks after all the time and that he's praying for and you know, going after. We're on a more personal level. And, you know, we may have 10, 20, 30 people in that class, and we've got one individual that needs that attention. And, man, it's a sacrifice. It really is. And I commend those of you who are leading those classes. There's a lot. We're not just having to take the time to prepare for the classes and teach them, but really, I mean, if you're all in, man, it's almost a full-time job. I mean, you're putting a lot of care and work into a lot of individuals, and then sometimes, you know, every now and then there's one person that just demands more of our time. But it's like you said, you know, sometimes if you just care for them and show them that you care for them, you may be the only person that they feel that actually does care about them, and that might be the saving factor.
So I think if your leaders, your other leaders in the room, y'all have a plan of what to do when that happens, and then you're not thrown off guard.
Communication. Yeah. Don't just assume if you're the one hearing that from that individual, you know, don't just take it upon yourself to think that you can solve the problem. You got to communicate that to the other leaders and to the group leader. We'll go through this real quick just to let you know what we're thinking here. I made this for the staff initially and thought, well, maybe the Life Bible Study group leaders may want to use this and just have on hand. Feel free to, you don't have to keep it with you necessarily if you want to just keep it in the room that you're teaching in, whether it's just on the wall there or whatever. But these are just a little helpful when you have to communicate, when you need to make the call to communicate an incident. These are the ones that we felt, well, these are the ones that could probably happen in this type of environment. You got a code blue as a medical response, a code red is kind of the obvious fire, code orange is a hazardous spill, code silver is, and we want to get this right, code silver is just an armed person. So it's like if somebody came in, you know, right now the law says you can open carry. There's a reason why we don't have signs out there, but we don't have signs out there to tell people that they can't open carry. So if you see somebody coming in that is open carry, we do not allow that. So either you will need to take the initiative and say, hey, you know, our policy says that, you know, we're not going to allow people to open carry here, but it's also best for you to call security or, you know, and security's number is on the back here. It's two different numbers. Call security and let them know, hey, I've seen him. There's a guy that's walking down the hall. He's got a, you know, pistol on his hip. He's not carrying it. Obviously, there's a difference between somebody just walking, you know, nonchalantly down a hallway and they're carrying a pistol in their holster, and a guy walking with a pistol in his hand down the hallway, right? So that's a different threat. So if you see that, then you're going to want to respond a little different. You want to call 911, then call security, and then get whoever you can and find shelter or get out of there, get away from it. But the code gray is specifically for like an open carry individual that's just walking around, didn't know our policy, and he's just thinking he can just walk in. Now, just to let you know, the reason why we don't have signs up there is because as a private organization, we have the right to not actually allow access into this building for any reason. So we can just address the individual and say, sir, we can't allow you to bring your weapon in here or take it out to your vehicle or take it home, but we're not going to allow you to carry. At that moment, if the person wants to escalate the situation and say, well, I can do what I want to do, that actually gives us the right to go ahead and have police intervene, and they can escort the person, or we can give them a no trespass. We have the right to no trespass. So most public organizations, public places don't have that right. They have to post the signage that the state requires, but we do not because we're a nonprofit, plus we're a private organization. They're on private property, so we have the right to do pretty much do what we want. Another reason why we didn't post the signage is pretty much for aesthetic purposes. Any of you have seen the signage, but they have to be in 1-inch block letters. They're really big, plus you have to have them in two different languages. And they have to actually be at every entrance of the establishment. Yeah. So just think of how many doors we have to this building. You have to have one that sign at every one of them. It just looks standoffish. You know, we want to be welcoming. So there's a couple reasons why we don't do that. So then code gray is combative person, not just physical, but if you see two people arguing, you want to report it, get somebody in security, or even let HPD know. Now, the trick with HPD, just to let you know, is they are there to enforce the law, not to implement policy. So unless somebody is actually breaking the law, they cannot really intervene in the incident. So if two people are arguing, you can tell HPD, and then HPD will relay it to us. If HPD is the closest person there, then go ahead and tell them, and they'll relay it to security or myself. But if people are fighting and they, you know, then that's a little bit different. HPD come in and intervene. Amber Alert is missing child, so child abduction or lost child. Internal triage can be a few different things, a bomb threat, an actual active shooter situation, computer network down or power outage. And then external triage is obviously tornadoes, hurricanes, anything that's damaging or could damage the building or the structure of the building. Citywide power outage, all that stuff. And then we have, the code clear. You'll usually hear that. You as the person reporting the issue wouldn't call the code clear. It would be whoever's running security at that time, whoever the communication, who is head of communicating that, would be the one to call code clear. And then we just put the security officer and security mobile phone numbers on the back, including this is my office phone number as well. But you want to make sure if it is a life-threatening situation or you feel that the law is being broken, you want to call 911 first, just to make sure that they're at least on the way. The great advantage that we have here is that we have HPD pretty much here at all times. We have at least one officer, so it's a blessing to have that here. Really, we're very blessed.
We've got a question back to your firearms in the facility.
Yes, sir.
So you talked about open carry. What about concealed carry?
Concealed carry is a little bit more of a don't ask, don't tell policy.
Okay.
The reason why we haven't really attacked that one is it's just almost impossible to manage. Concealed means concealed. You can't see it, so it's kind of hard. We're not going to put up metal detectors, and we're not going to wand people coming in. So, there's just a measure of trust, and it's very, to be honest with you, it's really hard for me to get over that one. Coming from the military and having all the firearms training that I have, it's really tough to imagine the amount. And I have a sense that we've got a pretty good amount of people that probably conceal carry in this church. It's hard to imagine how things would go if we had a situation. I've told several people, somewhat in a jokingly way, if that actually happened, I would be hitting the deck because I don't know who's got the gun and who's shooting with who. and which is a little scary. And they're, I'm actually having conversations with some police departments and some guys in SWAT departments to figure out a way that we can have those meetings, maybe with concealed carriers, to see, to bring them in and have some sort of forum or conversation on how, you know, we can coordinate a response if we have to have that. So I just want to let you know that we are, I am having those conversations. Actually, there's a SWAT team that's going to be out here next week, pretty much all week for Super Bowl. I'm actually having conversations with them on a pretty consistent basis to figure out how we can address those, that issue. So that's about it, unless anybody else has a question. Any more questions? Appreciate you guys' time. Thanks for coming. I'm always open, too. If you ever have any questions, stop me in the hallway, or I'm always here, too. So happy to assist. I'm going to give you this. It's for the open the door prize thing. Just taking it.
Yeah, if I can assist anywhere.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that.
I'm offering 25 years, and I'll offer to train teams for my counselor right now.
Thanks. I appreciate
that. Matter of fact, I was down there yesterday. We sell furniture.
Oh, really? Yeah. At the downtown?
At the site.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did some of the stuff here.
We may, I'll keep this in mind, because another thing you might want to consider is being on our safety committee.
Raleigh Solomon.
Raleigh. Yeah.